This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
So let's pick up Parashas Toldos, and we're now on Perek Chof Hei, of course. Pasuk Chof Dalet, 25-24. Learning about the birth of Esav and Yitzchok. Vayimlu'u yameho laledes, and her days to give birth were full. She had a full 9-month pregnancy. Vehine, and behold, toimim bevitno, there were twins in her womb. What do you notice about that word toimim? Do you notice anything interesting? There's no yud. What else is missing? It's missing. Also missing an aleph. It's also missing an aleph. So it's missing an aleph and it's missing a yud. And Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, the second Rashi on Chaf Dalet, V'hinei Tomim, says Rashi Chaser. So their letters are missing. Uve Tamar Te'omim. And the other case of twins being born was Tamar. And there it says Te'omim, with an aleph and with a yud. Male, full. Lefi Sheshnehem Tzadikim, because there they were both tzaddikim, aval kan echad tzaddik ve'echad rosho. But here, one is a tzaddik and one is a rosho. So what letter do you think would make sense to leave out of the word because one is not a tzaddik? The yud. Yud represents Hashem and everything. So Hashem takes his name out of these twins because they're not complete. It doesn't explain why not the aleph. But it does explain why not the yud. Vayetze harishon.
So we cannot. Why
wouldn't
Rashi explain that?
I don't know. The main thing is that there's a difference that one is full and one is not, and the difference between the fullness and the missing is that they're two different qualities of people. Although Yaakov was so great, but still, it doesn't take up for the fact that there wasn't completion in the two of them, and we'll see a little bit more about that. Vayetze harishon admoni. And the first one came out, an admoni, which generally is taken from the word Adam. It could also be from Adam. He came out a complete human being. Or admoni, from Adam, that he was red. Kuloi, completely, ka'aderes se'ar, like a fur coat. Vayikru'ushmo Esav, so they called him Esav. Why? What does Esav got to do with him coming out all hairy? Already made. Says Rashi, in the third Rashi on Kafhe, Vayikru'u Shemoi Esav, HaKol Kru'u Lo, says Rashi, who's Vayikru? They called him. Who's the they? Well, it could be his mother and father, but it seems to be Vayikru'u, they called him, everybody called him, people called him, okay? Lefisho Yonase V'nigmar B'saro K'ven Shalim Harbe, he was born like a mature child, with his hair complete, and therefore he was asui, he was complete, he was made. So there's a certain completion in Esav, which is interesting that there should be such an idea, even that there's completion in him. The first Rashi on Chof Hei, Admoni, Rashi takes it that Admoni means red, which is the way Unklus translates it as well, Simuk, which means red. Siman Hushi has shofech damim. That's a sign that he's going to be a murderer. And again, we've got a question: does that mean that he had any choice in the case? Was he predestined that he was going to be a murderer? In which case, how can he be responsible if he was born that way? So we'll look into that a little bit as well. The acharechen back in the pasuk, and after that, right?
He was red.
Like a fur coat. V'acharechen yotzo ochiv, and after that his brother came out. V'yodoyo chezes ba'akev Esav, and his hand was holding on to Esav's heel. Vayikro Shemo Yaakov, and he called his name Yaakov. VeYitzchok ben Shishim Shana Beledes Esav, and Yitzchok was 60 years old when they were born. Now, who is the Vayikro Shemo? First, it says Vayikru Shemo. They called him. That was society, and Vayikro Shemo would be who? And he called him. He called him Yaakov. Who would that be? Well, the simple thing would be his father. His father called him. Why? But it cannot be his father. Why would it not be his father? Vayikra Shmo Yaakov. Why would it not be his father? Because look at the sentence. Vayikra Shmo Yaakov. And he called his name Yaakov. And then it says, and Yitzchak was 60 years old when he gave birth to them. What should it say? It should say, and Yitzchak called him Yaakov. And he was 60 when he was... The fact that Yitzchak comes in as the subject of the second phrase would imply that the subject of the first phrase is not Yitzchak. So who was it that called him? And it can't be Rivka because it doesn't say Vatikra, it says Vayikra. So who on earth gave Yaakov his name? Esav was given his name by society. That was his nickname. His nickname was stuck with him. They called him Esav, and that remained his name all the time. Says Rashi, Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. Who called him Yaakov? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam, gave Yaakov his name. And it's interesting, it's God who changes his name later on, or adds to his name later on, but this name it was named by Hashem. Now she goes on, Dovar Acher Aviv Koro Lo Yaakov, Al Shem Achizas Ha'ote Akev, or you could say it was his father who called him Yaakov, because he was holding on to Yaakov's ankle. Now, why does Rashi give that reason for the second explanation? The first explanation is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him Yaakov. Or, his father called him Yaakov because he was holding on to the akev of his brother. So what does that imply according to the first translation? According to the first meaning, why did Hashem call him Yaakov? Different reason. Not because of that. So we always say, why was he called Yaakov? He was holding on to his brother's heel. No, that's only one view. There's another view, he was called Yaakov for some other reason. If Hashem called him Yaakov, that was his essence. It had nothing to do with the fact that he happened to come out holding his brother's ankle. So if you go to the previous Rashi, the Akev Esav, he was holding on to the ankle of Esav. Siman she'en ze maspik ligmor malchusoy. It's a sign that the one wouldn't complete his reign before the other would take it from him. So who's the one that wouldn't complete before that? Who's the other one that would take it? Yeah, it would seem, because Yaakov was the one who was holding on to his akev, that means that he wouldn't, that Esav would grow, but before he gets to the completion of his kingdom, it would be taken away from by Yaakov. So that could be when Hashem calls him Yaakov, there's something essential in the term Yaakov, other than that he just happened to be holding on to his brother's ankle. Let's do some afoshim on that. So the three that I'm keen to do is a balaturim, two balaturims, and a daat zakenim and a kleyoko if we have time. Let's see how we go. The balaturim on chavhei admoni. He was an admon. Have you got that chavhei in the balaturim? Says the Baal HaTurim, Beis B'Mesoiro. There are two cases in Tanakh where this word appears. The Baal HaTurim does this often. He compares and links when there's an unusual word used, he looks where else that word is used and creates linkages. Hacha, this is the one case. The Idach, and the other case, is B'hu Admoniim Yefei Enayim. He was red-haired and had beautiful eyes. Gabi David. Kishiro Shmuel Es David Admoni. When Shmuel saw David was, you remember when Shmuel was looking at all the sons of Yishai, he was quite sure it wasn't David that was out to be the king. And one of the reasons was because he was a redhead. Amar Zeshef Echdomim. Okay, Esav, this can't be it. This is like Esav, he's a redhead. Falkein Ne'emar Im Yefei Enayim. And that's why we're told, no, David had beautiful eyes. There's a difference. Why? What is beautiful eyes? Im Da Sanhedrin Hu Oseh. It's true David will also kill, but he'll do it with the Sanhedrin's permission. Shenikru Enayim, because the Sanhedrin is called eyes. The Sanhedrin are the eyes of the generation. Shneimar v'Enei Ha'edah, as we learn in Parashas Korach, that the eyes of the community are called the Sanhedrin. So the Torah says, look, it's not just the red hair, it's the eyes. Now what's interesting is, when did this happen, that Shmuel saw David as being a redhead? How old was David? Well, he certainly wasn't a baby. He was a young man already, he was a teenager already. The beautiful eyes can be developed. Beautiful eyes doesn't just mean they were blue eyes or they were that you one can see what the eyes mean. The eyes mean that he won't do it without the Sanhedrin. It means it's a way of how he looks at the world. That he looks at the world through the eyes of truth, and you can see that in the person's eyes. You can see, is there cruelty in the eye or isn't there? So it's well known that if the best way of seeing a person is their eye. If you can look at somebody's eye and isolate their eye and not be taken in by the eyebrows and the eyelashes and the eyelids, just look at the pupil of the eye, you see right into the person, to what their mood is at that moment, you see everything in the eye. That's a principle just in knowing people, and it's a principle in physiology as well. That when you go for a checkup with an eye checkup, they look at your eye very carefully. What are they looking at? They're looking at the health of your whole capillary system. They can see everything in the eye, the whole health of the body. And you know that there's a whole science of diagnosing disease, iridology through the eye. So that the eye there's a huge amount that you can see by looking at somebody's eye, and somebody can see the eye as the window of the soul, as they say. You see both ways through the eye. But the beauty of the eye is something that develops through life, or ugliness of the eye. Whether the eye is cruel, it's very seldom that a child is born with a cruel eye. That's developed, or that a child is born with a very kind eye. Most babies, their eyes are sweet. And you look at them as adults, and the eyes look different sometimes. So with David, even though he was already a young man, his eyes were beautiful. And Hashem says to Shmuel, don't just look at the red hair. Yes, the red hair says he has a streak of violence and passion in him. But look at those eyes. You can see from those eyes that he knows what to do with that passion. So yes, now we can go back to the Rashi. Does his red hair mean that he's going to be Shofech Domim, that he's going to be a murderer? Yes. But there are different ways he could do it. He could do it as a general in the army. He could do it as a king. He could do it. There are different ways he could do it. It didn't have to be done as a criminal. That he could have developed eyes that would have worked with his red hair in a different way. A very important balaturim, because in this balaturim we see, yes, we're given a tendency by the way we're born, but our eyes aren't fixed by the way we're born. The color of our hair might be, and the color of our eyes might be fixed, but kind eyes or cruel eyes or deep eyes or shallow eyes or perceptive eyes or blind eyes, that's something that we develop by the way we use our eyes. Eyes change during one's lifetime. Eyes change during a lifetime, and they change by mood. You can see exactly where a person is holding. And then you can't hide. There's nothing you can do. You can't disguise. The eye is the only part of the body language that you can't disguise. And if somebody knows how to look into an eye, you can't. There's nothing you can do. That person knows exactly what's up with you.
So that's how when people don't look at you straight in the eye, they don't want you to know what they're really.
Well, that's in Western culture. Other cultures have different things. In the United States, for example, not looking at somebody straight in the eye is incredibly disrespectful. It's very, very disrespectful. And there's an immediate assumption that you're not honest, that you're shifty, that you're. So sometimes foreigners who come to the United States don't know why they're not making friends in there. They just come from a culture that doesn't. You don't make direct eye contact because there's an understanding. That's where you connect. All the rest is fake. If you want to really connect, you look at each other in the eye, and that's where you interact. And that's where you get to know one another. The other interesting thing about Esav is, what is the gematria of Esav? Add Esav up, what do you get to? Shin is, let's start with the shin, because that's 300. And the ayin is 70, and the vav is 376. Now, of all the words that have the same gematria, the most unlikely one is the one that it is. Shalom. Add up shalom, so the shin is 300. And the 30 and the 40 is 70. Lamed and the Mem is 70, and the Vav is 70. Of all things, and the Balaturim brings it. Gematrias we don't do on our own. Gematrias, there has to have some source for it. So Esav, if you look at the last piece of Balaturim on that Pasuk, Esav, the Gematria Sholem. And Gematria, that's why, She'il Malei Shmoy Shehu Sholem, if it weren't the fact that his name had Sholem in it, Hoyomacharif Ha'ilam, he would have destroyed the world. So there was something restraining in that name Esav, which interestingly, what did we say Esav means? How do we translate it? Complete. And what does Shalom mean? Shalem. Complete. So there's a connection between his completeness and peace. And if it weren't for his let's try and understand this Balaturim a little bit more deeply. That would be okay if God called him Esav. Mm. Then I would say it's God gave him a name which is Shalom, and in the Shalom there's peace. And had God not given him that name, there would have been real trouble. But who gave him the name? We've just learned it was his nickname. How did his nickname of Esav cause him not to destroy the world? Because its gematria is Shalom. Doesn't make sense. That's absurd.
Isn't it giving names, even amongst the people, give names to parents?
Yeah, but how would that impact? How would that impact Esav? How many of you know the gematria of your names? Do you think Esav went and did a gematria and figured out, Shalom, I better be careful not to destroy the world because my name is Shalom? It doesn't make any sense. What is it? So let's think it through a little bit carefully. Here we'll use some simple psychology to understand it. What causes people to be aggressive? What causes people to be abusive and controlling and aggressive? A feeling of being threatened. Where does a feeling of being threatened come from? We get aggressive when we're insecure. Why are we insecure? Because we have low self-esteem. Why do we have low self-esteem? Because we're not getting good feedback, whatever it is, or we're not interpreting the feedback correctly. So we think people don't value us, or we don't value ourselves. What was everybody calling Esav? You're a complete man. There's no reason for him to prove himself. And that gave him the show. And that had it not been for the fact that society held him in high esteem, he would have been a much more destructive force. Ordinary people, if a society doesn't hold, they take out their insecurities on their wives or on their husbands or on their children. But Esav would have taken it out on the world. This was a world figure of enormous power. And if he feels, when a world figure feels insecure, then we're really in trouble. When was the last time we saw that? Hitler. Most insecure person we know from his history. He was a real insecure person. Who was he descended from? Malek, Esav. So, but they didn't call him Esav. That he didn't grow up being told you're a complete little boy and you're wonderful and you're Esav. He was told exactly the opposite. So in Esav's descendant, where else do we see it? Who else had a Haman? Haman, the same thing. Haman also all the time trying to prove himself, trying to be accepted by the king, trying to have everybody bow down to him. A man who suffers such low self-esteem, that's incredibly dangerous. When Amalek has low self-esteem, it's incredibly dangerous. So what should we do with Amaleki people if we're not going to kill them? Because we don't know who they are. Today we don't have people who are 100% Amalek. We don't know if there is such a person. And there probably isn't, because there's been such mixing of the cultures. Who's today Amalek? But what we do probably know is that there's a certain amount of Amalek in a whole lot of people. So when we talk about Amalek and in wiping out Amalek, really what we're going to be looking at is the Amalekite tendency in many, many people. So when we're dealing with Amalekite kind of people, what do we need to do? How do you make them, avoid them becoming destructive? Give them positive input. Build them up. Just build them up. Build them up. If you see a person who's powerful and insecure, just build them up. That's very important for wives to know about husbands, because many men are insecure. And teachers for sure need to know that. Teachers for sure need to know that. And people who work for bosses. The higher a person gets in an organization, very often, not always, but very often, he's driven to prove himself. People, it requires tremendous mesiras nefesh to make it to the top of a corporation. And usually the people who do make it to the top are driven by a need to prove themselves. If they're driven by a need to prove themselves, they're feeling inadequate. They're feeling inadequate. The way to get them just to be normal is to build them up, to tell them they're Esav. There's a certain completion in them. But let's go a little bit deeper into that. Sorry? As a little boy, they just saw his physical form. As he grew older, he was very competent. He just had enormous competency. That he wasn't a nice person, nobody realized, because he was so manipulative, as we'll see further on. He was the master manipulator. He was the master marketer. He presented himself well. He spoke the right language. He wore the right clothes. He did the right image. Everybody thought he was just wonderful. So he was constantly getting good feedback. The problem is, when an insecure person gets good feedback that isn't really deserved, what happens to him? His ego gets bigger. It doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't make him a better person. It just makes him less destructive. So when I say that it's a way to handle bosses and husbands and so on, it's a way to handle them just to avoid the damage. If the man happens to be an abusive person, it kind of keeps the abusiveness in check by building his ego, but it doesn't make him, it doesn't build his true self-esteem, it just nurtures his ego. So you need to understand, in a relationship, what do I want to do in this relationship? And it's usually men. What do I want to do in this relationship? Do I want to protect myself by building his ego and protect the people around him, or do I want to help him grow as a human being? And those are two completely different approaches.
Yeah.
And the role of the father in the
race.
Yeah, you're right. The fact that father thought highly of him, and that might be why Rivka never told him about her nevuah, because she realized the only way to maintain or to contain this man is going to be getting positive input from him. If his father starts yelling at him, then he's really going to be dangerous. So she, in her wisdom, might have realized, let the father think he's great. I'll figure out a way to get the bracha away from him. But if I tell the father up front that I know by Nevuah that this is not the man, he's going to be let loose on society and he'll destroy the world. So there's a need that was great wisdom in the way Rivka managed the relationship between Esav and his father Yitzchak. Now, what's also interesting is, if we say there is the potential for Shalom, so we're talking about Shalom on a superficial level here, that the fact is that without this he would have destroyed the world. So by Shalom, what do we mean? We mean that he kind of doesn't destroy the world. But it probably goes further than that. There is a Shalemus. How could Esav have got true Shalemus? Let's say Esav would have chosen to be a tzaddik. Those of you who are learning the Rambam with me on Shabbos see that everybody can choose what they want to be. And the Rambam didn't bring Esav as an exception to that rule. That means Esav could also have chosen to be a tzaddik had he wanted to, and that's what his father was hoping he would do. So assuming Esav would have made that choice, how would it have played out? What would his role have been? What would he have done? Sorry? He would have supported Yaakov. He would have said, Yaakov, you need to be pure. That means you can't get into politics. That means you can't get into business, because you're going to have to compromise your purity if you go into those areas. I'll take care of that. I know how to manipulate. I know how to market. It's interesting now with Rabbi Goldfein passing away there. You're aware of how little marketing he did. No, he did no marketing of himself, of his yeshiva. That was goes back to the time of Tells. The Tells all forbade any marketing of Tells. In Europe already, they wanted to just put an advert in the papers so that they'll get the good boys coming. This is an Ivy League yeshiva. And they just wanted to put in, and you wouldn't hear of it. There's no advertising. Because the moment you start advertising, you're compromising purity. You're building image. The moment you're building image, you're onto externalisms. And they were very emphatic about that, and that's how he lived. And that's what Esav would have said to Yaakov, then, I'll do the advertising. You don't worry about it. I'll do the advertising. I'll do the diplomacy. I'll do the politics. I'll do the business. And you sit and learn Torah. That would have been an amazing partnership. And then there would have been Shalemus. That's how there could have been Shalom. So when it says Esav, his name is Sholem, he's been given already direction as to what you're meant to do. Make peace with your brother and have Shlemus. And then if that would have been the case, the two would have been one. And there would have been an Aleph in the Torah. So what's the other letter that's out? It's an Aleph. There's no Yud because there's no godliness in half of it. And there's no Aleph because they weren't one. So it ends up being Tobim, Tafvov, Mem, Yud, Mem, without the Yud, and without the Aleph.
He probably would not have got the brocha
because the fact is he did sell the bechor. The fact is that Rashi here goes into the whole thing that he was meant to, that Yaakov was meant to be the bechor, and that all worked out right. But his brocha would have been very supportive of one another, and in a way even the way that he sort of tried to give them the brochas they were. So he wouldn't have got Yaakov's brocha, but he would have been part of the whole. They would both have got a brocha completely, with each one with their specific area. He couldn't have been Yaakov. And it wouldn't have been required that he be Yaakov. If Esav would have been a tzaddik, if he would have used his talents to support Yaakov. And Yaakov would have been a tzaddik if he would have just sat and learned and taught Torah. Each person can be. Being a tzaddik doesn't mean you have to be what someone else is. Not everybody has to be a Chofetz Chaim in order to be a tzaddik. Each person has to be what they are, use their talents for the right reasons and for the right purpose. And that's what Sitkus is. There was no expectation that Esav become a Yaakov, but Esav could have been a tzaddik. That he had the opportunity to do. Just the last piece. I was going to do two pieces of Klei Yaakov, but let me just do the one piece of Klei Yaakov, which is in Chovav. Ba'achareichen yotza ochi v'yoda uchezis be'ekav Esav. You got that? I'm going to read through it quite fast, so you'll follow it inside, but the main thing is to understand what he says. Ki yad mem shaltoi lo yeh lo miyad b'yoyim hivaldoi. Holding on to the ankle means you will not be dominant from day one, when you're born. Ki im besoif b'voy b'yomim. When you're much older, when you're an older man, you will overtake Esav. Kahura shem ekev hamore al hasoif. So now the Klei Yaakov is giving us some sense of why Hashem called him Yaakov. Hashem called him Yaakov because Ekev means, it's like the end of the body, and Ekev means, in Hebrew, it means v'hayo Ekev tishmun. It's a consequence of listening to the Torah. Ekev is a consequence, an outcome. Ekev is always the end of the story, the outcome, the end. So Hashem called him Yaakov not because he was holding onto the ankle, but Hashem called him Yaakov because his greatness was going to come later. Kach hashlemus hanafshi nikne b'yoser b'sof yimei chelder shel ha'odom. Human growth takes place as the human being grows older. Ki sof kol dover akol nishma. Because it takes, as it says at the end of Kohelet, at the end of everything you understand it. When do you understand if you read a book? When do you get it if it's a good book? At the end. You go to a good movie. When do you get it? At the end. Your life is the same. You don't get your life until the end. When you're getting, the closer you get to the end, the more your life starts making sense. And that's why it's so interesting. The whole resistance to aging is such a non-Jewish idea. And I'm not suggesting physically, of course, one has to stay young and youthful and energetic as far as one can, as far as one's able to. But at the same time, to understand that the process of aging is an unbelievable bracha. One starts seeing things, you start getting sense, the process of maturation. Just as you don't want a baby to remain a baby, you call that stunted. If a baby doesn't grow up, that's a terrible thing. And if a teenager remains a teenager and doesn't mature into an adult, that's a terrible thing. But then there comes a time when people suddenly say, okay, now I want to remain a pygmy. Now I want to remain undeveloped. That development process goes on, and it's as necessary and as needed to get to see the story. You need certain retrospective to be able to look back and see the pattern and understand what it's all about. There's nothing you can understand in the early years of life. And older Talmidei Chachomim have greater wisdom. That's why we say, "Mipnei seva tokim," stand up in front of an elderly person, even if he's not a Talmid Chacham. The fact that he's lived a life means that he knows things that a younger person can't possibly know. Even if he's nothing, he's a goy, it doesn't matter. The fact that one has had time, how much you can. The fact that one has had time enables one to understand things that you can't possibly have in a short space of time. But when a person is born, there is no sign of the ultimate development that will take place. That's why we said you can see Esau's got red hair, but you couldn't see his eyes. David HaMelech, you could see his eyes, but not as a baby. You could see David HaMelech's eyes when he was a young man. That's when Hashem said to Shmuel, look at his eyes, not his hair. Because the eyes are what is what develops. The hair is DNA that he's born with. The color of his eyes is not what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is talking about. Looking at his eyes, see that he has the eyes of Sanhedrin. It's a different kind of eye. And this is unbelievably dramatic and beautiful. And that's why, says the Klei Yocher, tzaddikim can't be rewarded in this world. Because when do they start deserving their reward? It's at the end. Until then, the story hasn't unfolded. There's nothing to reward them for. They're still busy growing. They're busy developing. You don't want Hashem to judge you when you're 20. You don't want Hashem to judge you when you're 30. You're just busy unfolding. When you start getting it, that's when you start modifying your value system. And you start saying, no, I'm getting it. No, I'm understanding it. But that starts after 50. So it's only then that you really start developing in the 50s, 60s. Now you're getting it. 70, now things are making sense. Now you're ready for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to say, okay, now judge me. So what's the Rebbeinu Shel Olam going to say? Okay, you can have a Porsche now. That's not what you want when you're 70. So why would the Rebbeinu Shel Olam reward you in this world when he's rewarding you for things you achieve at the end of your life, not at the beginning of your life? It's unbelievable. Such a simple explanation. To why tzaddikim don't get rewarded in this world. That's not where they deserve it. Sharei ikas man kneas hashlemus will be a mei hazikno, because the main time that you develop completion is an elderly, older time. Be you so korov l'sharei mavis, as you approach the gates of death, the nearer you get to death, the more perfect you become, because you start seeing the world in proper perspective. Ki az sichlo hilechu miskaber, because his mind gets brighter. One gets deeper, one understands things that one doesn't understand before, if you're learning. If a person stops thinking, then his mind atrophies. But if a person keeps his mind active, the older he is, the more he understands, the more he gets. By the time he's older, what you can start rewarding him at the end of his life, by that time he doesn't want the things that he would have wanted as a young person. And that's why the perfect people, the Shleimim, hold on to the heel of Esav. Esav is physical completion. That's the piece of the previous Klei Yocher that we didn't learn. When they called him Esav complete, that was talking about physical completion. What a beautiful young man, how good you look, and others, handsome, and all the rest of it. That's all physical completion. A Chochem understands, my completion comes at the end. An athlete's completion is when he's in his 20s. That's when he's at his height, and from there it's all the way down. For me, for a tzaddik, for a talmid chacham, 20s, I haven't even begun. I only start getting to my athletic prowess when I'm 60s, in my 60s. When I'm 70s, I'm a real athlete. Now I'm ready to start running. Now I'm ready for my medals. But the medals I want when I'm 80 are not the medals I wanted when I'm 20. But at 20, I wasn't an athlete. I wasn't in the race when I was 20. That's what holding on the Ekev of Esav. We've got to understand that there are people whose development is in their youth, and we hold onto the Ekev. And our own beings have the Esav and the Yaakov. We have an area that is the physical development, and there, yes, we reach our peak when we're in our 20s. That's when we reach our physical peak. But the growth is the Ekev. Hold on to the Ekev. Comes later on, it comes much later on. That's why the Gemara says that you give elderly people good wine, just to remind them that there's some things that just you don't want it. You don't want them when they're but you take a young person is like grape juice. That's what a young person is like. An old person is like a bottle of wine that's been around for 20, 30 years. That has huge value. So when do you want to sell the wine? If you want your schar in Olam Hazeh, you get the schar for grape juice. If you want your reward for the wine, then either you take it at the end of your life, and who wants it then? Then you say, rather give it to me in Olam Haba. Rather keep it for me. I'm nearly there already. Really keep it for me. What are you going to give me here that is valuable? I've had it. I've lived my life. It's been a good life. Now give me another one. That's how Hashem works with tzaddikim. Gives us a whole new perspective on the way the Ribbono Shel Olam rewards Esavs and Yaakovs. Esavs he rewards for the grape juice and he pays them up front. And for the people who are going to be wine, he says, let's wait and see what the wine, how the wine comes out. When we open the barrel, and we drink the wine, then we'll reward you. And that's at the very end of life, that's when you open the barrel. That's what death is. Death is when finally you open the barrel and you taste the wine. That's Olam HaEmes, that's Olam HaBo.